You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
At gmail.com.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world, and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, live from the studio. And thanks for joining us today, listeners, on Friday, August the 1st, 2025. And you're here with me, Chloe, one of your presenters, and I'm also joined by Zane and Jacob in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Top of the morning to you. It is always important at the start of a show to acknowledge that we're being broadcast to you this morning from the 3CR studios in Collingwood, which are sitting plumb on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri and Woiwurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation. This always was and will be Aboriginal land. Sovereignty was never ceded, and we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging, and to those staunch Koori activists out there fighting on numerous fronts for treaty, for justice, fighting to stop black deaths in custody, and fighting for decolonisation and to get the rent paid. So, yeah, much respect.
And coming up on the show today, we're going to be... We'll get into some news headlines first, but we'll... Some of our interviews will be actually including Zane here, who's going to give us an update on the Defend the CFMEU, Defend the Unions, or Defend the Unions, Defend the CFMEU campaign. And then around 7:45, we're going to be talking with Green Left editor Isaac Nellis. We're going to talk about a very important supporter drive that Green Left is currently having. And then at 8:10, we'll be speaking with left-wing musician Les Thomas, talk about his upcoming launch, the Firing Line single launch and Palestine Solidarity event. But first we're going to jump into some headlines.
So there's kind of been a lot of political kind of developments that have happened in around Palestine Solidarity in the past week. I've been kind of struck, I've just finished reading a book by Omar El Akkad, he recently published this book, which is titled, you know, One Day Everyone Will Have Always Been Against This. And of course, probably some of our listeners are probably, you know, would get the impression of what he's kind of referring to when he says that statement. In fact, I would imagine that this is going to be the kind of statement that we'll be saying to ourselves for the next year. Because right now we are in a stage within the Palestine Solidarity Movement where, you know, these horrifying images of starvation reflecting the horrors unfolding in Gaza is clearly now going too far for the majority of Western governments, who at this point have actually been enthusiastic supporters of Israel's genocide. So we now have a few examples. You know, we have former President, US President Barack Obama, had issued a moderately worded statement where he basically said there needs to be an end to Israel military operations. We also have sections of Israel society, including five Israeli human rights organizations, now agree that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. We've had some statements from some media organizations complicit in manufacturing consent for the Western pro-genocide line are starting to make statements condemning the killing of Palestinian journalists. And I think, drawing a bit on an article that I've just submitted for Green Left, I think these developments very much reflect both the kind of scale of the horror of what's happening, but also the success of the worldwide Palestine solidarity movement in undermining support for Israel. And it's starting to weigh on these governments and institutions. And so a few things I kind of want to highlight with this, which is we're now seeing Canada, Britain and France are now making moves to formally recognise Palestinian statehood at the United Nations General Assembly meeting in September. And it is expected that Australia and New Zealand will follow suit. But I think, you know, we shouldn't really be giving like any praise to these governments for changing their rhetoric, because actually at this point, it's still actually just a change in rhetoric. I actually read a good article that has given a bit of a good kind of outline of what are the countries that have actually been willing to call what is happening a genocide, and what human rights organizations have been willing to call it a genocide, and so on. And while it's clear that, yeah, these governments are changing their rhetoric towards what's happening, with the exception of Ireland and Spain, the majority of Western nations are refusing to call what is happening an act of genocide. And I also think this whole thing around recognizing statehood, now obviously this is a legitimate sort of demand in some ways. You know, there are a number of Palestinians that do support this move towards recognition of a Palestinian state. But really, I think we have to point out that for a lot of these Western countries, it's very much a face-saving exercise. It's very much a way for them to avoid taking any accountability for their complicity in crimes against humanity. But also, I think it has to be pointed out that this is actually just a distraction from actually implementing any kind of measures towards ending the genocide in Gaza. You know, the question needs to be posed to all these governments. Why aren't they immediately posing sanctions on Israel or ending military ties if what is happening is unconscionable? In some ways, it's even like you're even having things like the British government has used the issue of Palestinian statehood as like a bargaining chip against Israel. It's basically made this threat to say, hey, we will recognize Palestine as a state, as a legitimate state, unless you agree to a ceasefire. So if Israel doesn't stop its military operations, we'll recognize Palestinians as human. Like that's how far we're kind of going now. Now we're also going into what our own government is doing, and Albanese. Now there's going to be a lot. There might be some more news coming up about this, but Albanese is claiming that he is preparing an announcement to recognise a Palestinian state when the timing is right. Now, what timing he kind of means there, I'm not sure.
He's on his time.
Yeah, and I think also pointed out, I mean, Albanese has sort of made some of the strongest statements, in the past week. But also, it's still really, it's all just talk because...
Well, yeah, did anyone see a couple of weeks ago Albanese's response in an interview when a journalist just asked if Australia was considering sanctions against Israel? His response, he just got really annoyed and said something like, well, what sanctions are you suggesting? Like, as if to say, what are sanctions going to do? Well, you know, he should be able to answer that. What can sanctions do? The Albanese government knew how to respond to an occupation and an invasion of another country through its response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So why can't the same government apply this standard to apartheid Israel?
Yeah, and I think you're completely right. And In another recent interview, Albanese said his favourite word, and in fact, they've been saying this word a lot, actually, in a lot of interviews. He said that, well, one of the reasons why they won't impose post sanctions on Israel the same way they did towards the Russian government is he basically said to the journalists that, oh, the government is committed to real concrete action, not slogans. Well, actually, in actual fact, all the government has actually set up to this point has just been slogans. Like, we're committed to supporting a ceasefire, but not actually saying anything that would put pressure on Israel to actually implement a ceasefire. And I think also this other issue of the arming of Israel, I think, is very important. Because we've been saying this quite repeatedly on our program, but Australia is aiming to be the top 10 exporter of weapons, and Israel is one of the one of the main countries in the world that is very much the benefactor of all kind of developments in military technology. In fact, it's very much detailed quite heavily in Anthony Lewinstein's book, The Palestine Laboratory. And now David Shoebridge, Senator David Shoebridge, sort of questioned Penny Wong on this. Basically, Penny Wong kind of responded very angrily and then said that, yeah, it's true that Australia acknowledge, it's true that we do contribute to the global F-35 supply chain, but then try to add, oh, but you know, the parts that we sell are actually non-lethal in nature.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I have no idea what that means. I don't know how you can sell a non-lethal part of an F-35 unless they're talking about the coffee holders.
Well, someone made the point that, you know, you could sell the gunpowder that goes in a bullet. In and of itself, it's non-lethal. That's not the part that goes into someone's head and kills them. You could sell the bullet casing. That's non-lethal. That's not the part that goes into someone's head and kills them. This argument is absolutely absurd, that you can be providing critical parts that are used on the bomb bay of an F-35 that opens up and drops bombs on Palestinian civilians and try to claim that it's a non-lethal part. It is an absolutely absurd argument. I've got to be careful and avoid using the coarse languages on 3CR.
Yeah, but also I think, I mean, within the constraints of the law, I mean, you can't sneak in components of a drug, of an illicit drug. You can't sneak in components of an assault rifle
to someone who's holding up a bank. You're an accessory to a bank robbery if you do that, or you're an accessory to a murder if they kill someone with that assault rifle.
So it's sort of like what this argument that Penny Wong's making is absolutely absurd, and almost actually it's a classic example of gaslighting in a lot of ways. But also actually it's interesting because there's been all these reports that have sort of come out about Australia's role in the global F-35 supply chain. And also, I mean, you know, some things that have kind of come out as well is, you know, there are examples of components that Australia can sell to, like, another country. Like, I could just name a random country, but I'm not going to necessarily be precise in this. But hypothetically, Australia could sell components to, say, Thailand, and then Thailand can process those components and then ship it off to Israel. From Australia's point of view, when that kind of transaction happens, they're not actually selling anything to Israel. And they've actually changed their rhetoric to, we're not selling any weapons to Israel. We're not selling any offensive weapons or anything to suggest that we're contributing to the arms supply in Israel is actually just fake news. But now, since all this media, these sort of this Freedom of Information Acts have come out and said, the Albanese government has actually now changed their rhetoric to this, which is the parts we sell are non-lethal in nature. So it's actually really quite incredible that the government is so now on the back foot on this issue of arms that they just keep changing the goalposts on what things actually mean. And I guess I want to kind of make one last kind of point as well is, and I'd like to see what Chloe and Zane think about this, but I think that really, we have to really criticize this whole push towards, you know, Western governments going towards recognizing Palestinian statehood without taking any kind of concrete kind of action. And really, I think that one of the things that is clearly happening is it's clear that Israel has gone too far for a lot of these Western powers. It's clear that they have gone, what they've done is unconscionable in the eyes of these Western nations. But at the end of the day, Israel has always played an important role for projecting Western imperialist interests in the Middle East. And I think there's an element, and I think, you know, there's been a number of people who have kind of been theorizing about this, but, you know, and in fact, this was a comment made by, you know, a prominent Palestinian activist at the APAN conference I attended last year, but also this has been something that's been said by Ilan Pappe, that many people would know, an Israeli academic who's obviously been one of the most outspoken on speaking out for Palestine liberation. You know, they've both been making this sort of argument that, you know, we are kind of witnessing the sort of end days of sort of Zionism in a certain way. So what we're kind of seeing is the legitimacy of Israel as the so-called only democracy in the Middle East is actually becoming completely unjustifiable for most of the West. And so they're really trying to see if they can save Israel from itself. And that's why you sort of see comments where, you know, the Albanese government tries to sort of point out that, oh, well, you know, it's the Western governments also try to single out Netanyahu, like say, okay, well, the actual issue is Netanyahu who's carrying out this genocide. It's not Israeli society, but actually what Israel is doing is fundamentally built in the DNA of Israel as a settler colonial state. And I think, you know, there's clearly a conscious attempt by these Western powers to try and preserve that. They're going to try and see if they can give some little crumbs to Palestinians. And I guess the other thing as well, when you look at how they've actively kind of repressed the Palestine Solidarity Movement, and actually we haven't had a chance really to talk about the Harbour Bridge protest and the broad level of support gain. But when you look at how all these Western governments have tried to repress the Palestine movement, really what they're hoping for is they hope this issue will just go away. It won't be an inconvenience anymore.
Yeah, that people will just somehow stop feeling sick to their stomach every time they see these images of more civilians being killed, of the entirety of Gaza being flattened, of starving kids. Well, guess what? People are not going to stop feeling sickened and enraged by that. It's not going away.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, why I think, you know, we absolutely have to show up in large numbers on the street. And that's why, you know, there's going to be a lot of protest over the weekend for Palestine. And we'll be talking a bit more about some of these protests that, you know, listeners can get involved in over the weekend. Because I think, this is the time to get on the streets and really... The government is clearly on the back foot, and we have to keep pushing them, because, you know, we don't want these Western governments to save Israel from itself.
Yeah, we don't want them sort of taking credit, and this whole like recognition of Palestinian statehood. I mean, yeah, it does seem to be like a distraction or a cover or protection against taking accountability or taking any real action against the genocide, and it's sort of like covering their backs, because most Australian politicians, they claim to be against racism, they claim to be against war and imperialism and for peace, but Labor and coalition politicians' responses so far to Israel's genocide in Gaza they've actually just demonstrated time and again just how racist they are. And no matter how many gross atrocities that Israel, the IDF commit, even now using mass starvation as this weapon of war, major party politicians, they just continue to insist that the major atrocity, like the real problem, is Palestinian resistance groups taking a relatively small number of Israeli hostages on October 7th, 2023. So basically, this collectively you know, green lighting the collective punishment of an entire population for the acts carried out on October 7th. And yeah, it's just, it's awful that just apart from endorsing a couple of statements that mildly criticize Israel, Albanese and Penny Wong, they just they're continuing to supply Israel with the military equipment, with the F-35 warplane components. And we won't forget that. And yes, we do encourage people to please keep attending the weekly rallies and all the other local rallies and actions wherever you are. And let's keep marching for Palestine. There's also an article I wanted listeners just to point out in Green Left. It's called Israeli Organizations Say Israel is Committing Genocide in Gaza. And it's by Binoy Kantmark, who's a really great journalist for Green Left. So please give that a read. We'll come back to you with more news. Stay with us.
CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au. Wasting time in the unemployment lines.
Breadline, the new show from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
So put down that job plan and listen to us.
6 p.m. every Monday night on 3CR Community Radio.
Choose to use your voice print to access your account when you call us.
This deal really accentuates and is very complementary to the White Australia domestic policy. Here you have not only a white alliance, but an Anglo-Saxon alliance of the ultimate cultural allies of the United States banding together, and the significance that it is aimed at colored peoples, at Asian peoples, at Pacific peoples. This is injecting a horrible racial dimension to this conflict. So I think the U.S. and Australian elites' racist military policies are complementing the increasingly racist domestic policies. So I think, therefore, we really have to look out very, very carefully at this very dangerous synergy between racism on the military front and racism on the domestic front.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music, and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And now we're going to be interviewing CFMEU member Zane, who's with us in the studio. Zane's going to give us an update on the campaign he's involved with, Defend the Unions, Defend the CFMEU. So Zane, what is going on since the biggest attack on a union in recent history?
So there's a few things going on. Just to sort of recap the political situation, there was a bunch of reporting by the Fairfax Nine media, which was basically mudslinging, raised a bunch of allegations. Some of those allegations were serious, but at the end of the day, there hasn't been many court cases. We've been under, CFMEU has been under administration for almost a year now, and there really hasn't been that many court cases coming out of administration. And if what we're being told by Nick McKenzie and Fairfax Nine was true, then once the CFMEU was put under administration and the government-appointed administrator with dictatorial powers was given the keys to the union, was given access to all of the union's files and was able to interview all union members and, you know, get inside access to all of the what's been happening within the CFMEU, well, if what we were led to believe by Nick McKenzie was true, then there should be a flood of court cases right now. And there's not. And that, to me, shows that there is not enough evidence there to bring charges and to have the thing go to court and to have people found guilty. And the way I see it, if there's not enough evidence to charge and convict people under existing laws against corruption, coercion, bribery, or whatever criminality is being alleged, then ipso facto, there is not enough evidence to warrant putting the entire union under administration and to warrant sacking every single elected official Australia-wide in the CFMEU, the vast majority of whom have had absolutely no allegations raised against them. What we've also seen since the union was put under administration is Mark Irving, who likes to wave around the fact that he's a member of the ASU as some sort of evidence that we should have faith in the process that he is leading of putting the CFMEU under administration. He likes to say, oh, you know, militancy is not a crime and we're not going to be clamping down on the militancy of the CFMEU. He likes to claim that he's going to make the union more welcoming place for women and clamp down on misogyny. He claims that he's handing the union back to members. In terms of his claim that militancy is not a crime and that he's not going to be clamping down on that, one of the first things that he's done since being in admin is conflate entry permit breaches with criminality. Now, under the industrial relations laws that we've got in Australia, union officials need to have a entry permit to be legally allowed to come onto a job site. The problem is, in the construction industry, the way that the union is structured is you'll have a delegate or a shop steward at a particular construction site. Then you'll have an organiser, and that organiser works in a particular cluster of job sites or a particular region, and that person liaises with multiple delegates and shop stewards. They're the next person up, and then at the top, you've got the elected officials of the union. Now, there are something like 1,000 different construction companies in Victoria, and there are probably a similar amount of job sites that are unionised, and then a whole bunch more job sites that are not operating under an EBA, but where the union has a presence. Now, it's not possible for those, or it's not practical, and it's not a good use of union time, for all of those union organisers and officials to make sure that they've got 1,000 different entry permits for 1,000 different companies and 1,000 different jobs. It's just ridiculous paperwork for the sake of paperwork. So,
just box ticking.
Yeah. And Anthony Albanese, Mark Irving, Nick McKenzie, Murray Watt, these people don't have to live with the risk of getting silicosis when they're at work, at being exposed to asbestos that may later give them mesothelioma. They don't have to live with the possibility of being caught in a trench collapse that crushes them to death. They don't have to live with the possibility or deal with the reality of being at work and a dodgy employer is lifting a concrete beam that weighs 20 tons over their head, which could fall if a chain breaks and kill them. They don't have to live with the reality of possibly falling off a ladder and becoming paraplegic or quadriplegic or dying. So it's all very academic for these people who are cheering on and running the admin of the CFMEU. But for construction workers, this is very real. So when there's a safety risk, a construction worker will report this to their delegate or shoppy, and the shoppy will take it up with the boss. If the boss says, nah, tough crap, we're lifting that concrete beam over there, that's the best way to do it, and we don't care if there's workers below, the shoppy or the delegate from the CFMEU will then bring an organiser, and that organiser may come to the job and try and stop the job and say, this is not happening, you're not putting our work, our CFMEU members' lives at risk just to cut a few corners and save a few bucks. And then if the job is still not stopped and the employer is still trying to do dangerous stuff, then the top brass of the union may be called in. Vice presidents, presidents, secretary may come to that job site. Now, at some point, one of those people might not have filled out this piece of paper that says they're legally allowed to enter the site. And then the CFMEU might get fined. And guess what? That's the way it should be, because the CFMEU prioritises human life over a piece of paper that says you're allowed on this job. Now, the fact that Mark Irving, head honcho of admin, is conflating those entry permit breaches, of which there have been probably a couple thousand over the last 20 years, because it's a flaw in the industrial relations system that we've got. And yeah, the CFMEU prioritises human life over those bits of paper. The fact that Mark Irving is conflating those entry permit breaches with criminality and saying that he's going to clamp down on that and stop those breaches says that Mark Irving wants to reverse that situation and wants to prioritise that piece of bureaucratic paperwork over human life. And if someone has to die because a piece of paper wasn't filled out, then that's just the price that we pay for bureaucracy. And that is absolutely unacceptable. And that goes to the, I think that goes to the real sort of situation here, which is that admin is about clamping down on the militancy of the CFMEU and the fact that it does indeed prioritise human life over pieces of paper. Since admin has come in, admin has arbitrarily sacked a whole bunch of our best organisers. Now, if admin is alleging that the CFMEU is run by gangsters or mafia or some crap like this, first of all, the evidence just doesn't support that. Second of all, if that was the case, isn't sacking a whole bunch of the alternative leadership of the union who don't have any allegations against them just slightly counterproductive? This is the big issue with appointing someone like Mark Irving, who has no knowledge of the construction industry, who doesn't know who's who's in the zoo, who doesn't know the difference between this organiser and that organiser, who has no understanding of the landscape within CFMEU, just arbitrarily coming in like a wrecking ball and sacking so many of our best activists who have a absolutely rock-solid commitment to the integrity of the union, to the safety of workers. Mark Irving claims to be handing the union back to members. Instead, what he's doing is sacking a bunch of our most respected activists. Last month cancelled a branch meeting, which coincided with a strike action that was being taken by CFMEU members up in Brisbane. Now, I don't know if at our previous month's branch meeting, had it gone ahead, I don't know if members may have elected to take some kind of solidarity action with people in Queensland. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But the point is, admin should not be cutting off the opportunity for members to have those collective discussions. And what strikes me is that Mark Irving claims to be all about democracy in the union, members' control. But when there's a risk of members making a decision that Mark Irving doesn't agree with, he's happy to come in and shut down a branch meeting or close off avenues for democracy. The other thing that's been happening is the sacking of women activists from within the CFMEU. Now, construction is a male-dominated industry. A minority of construction workers are women, and a minority of activists within the CFMEU are women. That being said, those women within the CFMEU are some of our staunchest activists and organisers, are highly respected by the entire CFMEU membership. And CFMEU women released a statement probably about, this is back on the 4th of July, and it says, the administrator of the CFMEU has announced that the division will invest in a $5.4 million program over 5 years focused on addressing behavioural change by men in the industry towards women, including engagement of a project officer and creation of a steering committee for that project. despite the administration previously committing to consult with women members, this announcement has been made without consultation with women in the union. In fact, in the same time period when this plan was developed, the administrator refused funding which would have allowed the existing National Women's Committee to meet in person. As anyone who has been involved in gendered violence prevention knows, control of decision-making for women by men is widely recognised as one of the drivers of violence against women. Behavioural change needs to be systemic. You cannot say you want to change men's behaviour towards women while perpetuating the behaviour that needs to change by ignoring the voices of women in the union and telling us what we need. Prior to administration, the union was delivering an industry-specific WHS-based gender equity workshop developed by women in the union, which was effective at changing culture and promoting active bystander behaviour in the industry. This workshop had been delivered to thousands of construction workers in the ACT in Queensland, and was planned to be rolled out in New South Wales and Victoria in the second half of 2024. The administration ended those plans. ACT is still delivering the training and WA is going to start later this year, despite the administration. Women in the CFMEU have never had to ask permission to speak, but we are being silenced by this administration because the existence of our collective representative structures and our history of successful activism does not suit the narrative they have constructed about our union. If the administrator had consulted with women in the union using our existing self-determined structures at branch and national level, we would have told him we don't need a steering committee and a project officer delivering a single issue course directed at men. We reject this plan, which has been made without any input from women in the union and without any consideration of our actual needs. We need more capacity to raise and deal with all of the issues that affect women in our industries and in the union. We call on the administration to recognise, support and properly consult with our existing representative structures in each branch and at the national level. Nothing about us without us. And that's endorsed by the different women's caucuses and network groups throughout the country. This is sort of the modus operandi of admin, claiming that they're going to give the union back to members, meanwhile silencing members and sacking some of our best and most respected activists, claiming they're going to make the union more welcoming for women, meanwhile silencing CFMEU women, claiming militancy is not a crime, meanwhile clamping down on militancy, particularly on the issue of keeping construction workers alive. So I'll kind of, I guess, get towards wrapping up. But there was a good motion at the branch meeting on Wednesday night. Very well attended member meeting, probably over 200 people at that branch meeting. Most unions don't have branch meetings where rank and file members can question and get report backs from the leadership, where they can raise proposals, where there's discussion. The CFMEU is one of few unions that have that. Very few. And that's a throwback to the BLF years where we had a very vigorous and highly democratic rank and file driven union, and a lot of that has been kept alive over the years. So there's a good motion from Ralph Edwards at our branch meeting. Ralph used to be the president of the CFMEU up until probably, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. Part of the focus of Ralph's motion at the meeting is the High Court decision recently upheld that the government could place the CFMEU under admin, but it said that admin has to be in the interest of members, and said that admin can't just arbitrarily kind of open slather reconstruct the union and turn it into something completely different and just sort of abolish all the existing rules and procedures of the union. So Ralph's motion, and Ralph is part of this group called Construction Industry Support Association, focused on that aspect. So it says, after nearly 12 months in administration and endless slander of the union and its members, and no criminal prosecution of any member pursuing the industrial interests of the union, we demand the Albanese government and its administration, one, start the process to have democratic elections this year under the existing rules of the union. This is the thing. There was meant to be elections last year, and then the union got put into admin. So this is a very strong argument, I believe. You can't just postpone elections. Members pay to be a member of a union which has elected officials. You can't just shut off those elections during the entire period of administration. Two, make no changes to the objectives and rules of the national union and its divisions without membership participation and endorsement. Three, make no rule changes, demarcation agreements, or reach any understandings which change our union's coverage under its existing national and divisional rules. Four, withdraw the ban on so-called removed persons prior to union elections. Five, give full legal protection and representation to members subject to prosecution or disciplinary action for pursuing the industrial interests of the union. Because this is another thing that's been happening is admin has been denying legal representation to some of the small handful of people that have found themselves in court. And this is, I could go on. Look, I think even if someone is accused of doing the wrong thing within the CFMEU, they should still be entitled to legal defence. Mm. So I'll kind of finish there with the general political overview. The final thing to say is there's a couple of actions coming up.
Yeah, did you just want to quickly tell listeners about the protest against the ALP or at the ALP conference, because that's something that the Defend the Unions, Defend the CFMEU group is supporting?
Yes. So tomorrow, Defend the Unions, Defend the CFMEU is linking up with public housing activists, including from Save Public Housing Coalition and the group 44 Towers, is linking up with Free Palestine Coalition Melbourne and Trade Unions for Palestine, is linking up with people from Defend Dissent Coalition and holding a protest out the front of ALP conference, to look at the fact that we should have a big build of public housing instead of knocking down the existing towers that we've got. We need to stop those weapons exports to Palestine, to Israel, to bomb Palestinian people. We need to sanction Israel. So, yeah, a sort of a broad protest against the various fronts where the ALP is not just dropping the ball, but is complicit in attacks on workers, attacks on Palestine, and attacks on public housing. There'll also be a refugee activist speaker there. So, yeah, 3:30 p.m. tomorrow, Moonee Valley Racecourse. Get out there, have your voice heard, and that will then feed into the big wave of Palestine protests that are happening on Sunday here in Melbourne and up in Sydney.
Thanks, Zane. We're just going to go to a quick break and we'll be back with our next interview.
As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in NAM.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest, President Donald Dump, leading the positive team. Take it away, Don.
It's going to be a big debate, a great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
You're back on Green Left Radio, 3CR, and we were just talking to Zane, a CFMEU member, giving us a really good update on the Defend the Unions, Defend the CFMEU campaign. And yeah, it was really concerning to hear about the safety and welfare of workers now that it's in administration, and also the ousting of female women in the union. And I guess bosses are not going to stop cutting corners and creating safety hazards if we just ask them nicely. It's actually up to the unity of the union members and them collectively deciding to stop work if there's a problem. So, please support the campaign. They do have a presence on social media, so you can get in contact with them, or you can even contact us at Green Left. We are going to go to a song. What was this song again, Zane? You wanted to play it?
Yes. Garbage, this, I think. This song is called Hold, and it's by Garbage. And the lead singer, Shirley Manson — Garbage were like massive in the 90s and early 2000s. And the lead singer, who would have known, now that it's like 25, 30 years later, is now middle-aged. And there's all these sexist man pigs who are like saying, "Aren't you a bit old for this?" And as a big FU to them, Garbage have released a new album, and it's got a bunch of really excellent music on it. And full credit to Shirley Manson and to all the other staunch middle-aged women out there continuing to rock on.
I also think, just one last thing, Garbage, I think, has also been quite outspoken in support of Palestine, if I'm correct. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they have been, yeah.
Word.
Now, get up to 8 weeks free when you join directly on eligible products with Bupa, winner of Canstar's Outstanding Value Health Insurance for 3 years running. To switch, search Bupa 8 weeks free today.
And that was Hold by Garbage. And yeah, shout out to Shirley Manson and Garbage. Apart from releasing excellent new music, also speaking up in support of Palestine. Now, this is 3CR, and we... this is community radio, right? We don't have corporate sponsorship, but some listeners may have noticed there was an ad for Booper popped up in the middle of that thing there, and we had to scramble to skip over it and turn it off. Look, we don't support Booper, and this is a good opportunity to point out that recently there was a court case by the ACCC against private health insurer Booper because they were ripping people off and they weren't paying their insurance. So, YouTube, if you want to sneak ads in for Booper, we're going to respond to that. Yeah, there was a news story. Private health insurer Booper repays millions over incorrectly rejected claims. One of Australia's largest private health insurers has paid back, I think it was $35 million so far, to thousands of members who had hospital claims incorrectly rejected. Booper has admitted to engaging in misleading or deceptive conduct and making false or misleading representations by advising members they were not entitled to private health insurance benefits when in fact they were. So there you go.
Yeah, thanks, Zane, and yeah, apologies to listener about that Boop ad, but at least it created the opportunity to diss Boop up. we'll stop saying Boop now. we've got our next guest on the show, Isaac Nellist. Are you there?
Good morning, Chloe and Zane, and anyone else there?
Jacob.
Yeah, I'm here as well.
Hey, Jacob.
Top of the morning.
I just wanted to say, I think every ad should be followed by a statement like that about the truth. But thanks for having me.
Yeah, listeners, so we're joined by Isaac Nellist. Isaac is an activist, Socialist Alliance member, and many other things from Gadigal country. But more importantly, he's one of the Green Left editors, and we've invited him on the show today to talk about the Green Left supporter drive and also an upcoming live stream event that we've planned. So Isaac, could you tell us a little bit about this Green Left supporter drive that we're actually in the midst of it now and the exciting live stream event?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, as you guys know, as a community radio station, it's hard enough to you know, produce any kind of media without the kind of corporate funding and advertising, such as you know, the one that just played before, to get by without the kind of funding that brings and corporate donations or even, you know, sponsorship and money that comes with being in groups like NGOs and stuff like that. So Green Left is pretty proud to be 100% grassroots, activist-driven and people-powered. But that does, of course, mean that we need to, you know, have a supporter drive every now and then to keep it going. And that's what we're in the middle of right now. We've started a supporter drive basically from the start of this month, essentially, and are going until the start of September. And we're asking, we need basically as many people as possible to sign up to become supporters of Green Left, to help us continue to produce, you know, the fortnightly newspaper that we put out, our regular interviews and podcasts, photography that goes up on, you know, Instagram and social media. We just need that support and also to maintain our events calendar, which is one of our most popular sites, is where you can go to find basically any protest that's coming up in your city in the next few weeks. So if people who are listening to this are interested in signing up, you can go to greenleft.org.au/support, and the plans just start from just $5 a month, and that gets you a digital subscription, or $10 a month to get the physical newspaper sent to your house. But as part of this whole supporter drive event, we've organised a live stream, which is coming up on the 16th of August from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in Eastern time. So that's going to be really fun. It's going to be an online event with incredible list of guests. I'll read out some of the guests that we've got lined up. So comedian Tom Ballard, as many people will know, Greens MP Abigail Boyd from New South Wales, the incredibly staunch and legendary Senator Lydia Thorpe, Karen Brown, who's an awesome housing activist, Christy Kane, who's a legendary unionist from CFMEU, Melbourne's very own Councillor Sue Bolton, the Socialist Alliance, as well as a Pakistani socialist, Ammar Ali Jan, Kristen O'Connell from the Anti-Poverty Centre, Zach Schofield from Rising Tide, and a whole bunch more. So not only will it be these kind of big names that are just read out, but we're also encouraging people to call in and you know, talk about briefly why they support Green Left and other activist media platforms as well. So we'd really love people to come to tune into that. It's going to be streamed on YouTube, and there's also going to be in-person gatherings that people can come and actually hang out with other like-minded people and you know, have some food or do some banner painting. There's various activities going on in different cities. You can find all the details of those gatherings on Green Left website or on our social media as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, that's an excellent, a very exciting lineup of guests, Isaac, and also Les Thomas, a left-wing musician who's going to be, we're going to be interviewing Les next. He's also coming on the live stream, and he's going to maybe play his new song. We don't know yet, but it might be a bit of a surprise. But yeah, it's just really great to hear that all of these people are coming on the live stream and showing their solidarity with an organization like Green Left, which is, you know, it's nonprofit media. We've always supported Palestine. It's a very anti-war paper, and it's been going for over 30 years now, and we want it to keep going. Isaac, we are running a little bit out of time, but is, you know, I guess maybe let people know how they can access this live stream event. Is it through the Green Left website, or is it YouTube, or what? How do people get?
Yeah, the best thing to do would be to head to our social media or our website, and there's, you know, links there, but it'll be streamed on our YouTube channel. So if you go to our YouTube, you'll find it, but it's also probably easiest to get the link from our website, which is greenleft.org.au. But, you know, keep an eye on our social media. We'll be, you know, plus posting the links around, especially as it gets closer, and also some of the more, the guests that we'll be announcing as it gets closer as well.
Yeah, and, you know, some of these activists that are going to be on our live stream or, you know, calling in, you know, they might be talking about some of the grassroots campaigns that they're involved in, or some of the issues that they really care about. And, you know, Green Left has supported all of that through its coverage. So I guess, Isaac, before we let you go, could you please remind people why it's so important to support activist media like Green Left?
Yeah, well, I think just as you've raised, Green Left has been supporting a lot of these campaigns for decades. So yeah, it's been we're in our 34th year, I think. But I think it's been particularly highlighted in the last 20 months with Israel's genocide in Gaza, that, you know, we can't rely on the mainstream media, obviously not the, you know, the right-wing kind of corporate media, but not even, you know, the ABC has been particularly shown up as, you know, not reporting the truth on what's happening and, you know, silencing the voices that are standing up for Gaza. And it's really shown that we do need alternative media platforms. And Green Left always had a particular focus as a working class perspective and activist perspectives on what is happening around us. So you'll see, you know, reports on things that are happening, protests, rallies that, you know, the mainstream media don't just pretend aren't even happening. I think it's really great as well, you know, when we're in particularly kind of dark times with what's going on in Palestine, and also, you know, a range of other things from, you know, climate change, deaths in custody, housing crisis, etc. I think it's a bit of an antidote to the depression that you kind of feel when you hear about these things, is to see that there are people fighting back. And that's the kind of aim of Green Left, is to, you know, report on those struggles and also encourage more people to get out there and take a stand. So I think that's the strength of activist media. And I think because we're, you know, it's all grassroots volunteer, like if people can get involved in many ways, contributing, sending in photos, writing news stories, etc. And it's actually a big community kind of collective project that we're all in together. So that's why I think Green Left is unique and why people should definitely support it in any way that you can.
Yeah, and listeners, if you are listening and you are not yet a subscriber to Green Left, you know, some people might be getting our broad newsletter, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a subscriber. Head right now to greenleft.org.au/support. Help our supporter drive. It's as little as $5 a month. And the live stream event is called Green Left Powering Rebellion. Any last comments before we wrap up, Isaac?
I just encourage everyone who's listening to attend the Palestine rallies this weekend. I'm in Gadigal Country, Sydney, where we've got the big Harbour Bridge March set to happen, and it's getting a huge list of endorsements. A whole bunch of unions have signed on. There's over 150 organisations have signed on, and I think it's going to be a massive march here in Sydney. I think it'd be great to see that replicated in Naam, where you guys are, but also all across the country. So we've got a list of the upcoming rallies on Green Left social media and website, but also check out your local Palestine groups. And let's make this a huge weekend for Palestine.
Thanks, Isaac, for joining us on the show. And you requested a song to play. Would you like to introduce that song? We'll play it for our listeners.
Yeah, this is a song people will have heard of, Bob Dylan, who was the rap duo who spoke up for Palestine at Glastonbury a few weeks ago and got basically attacked by the corporate media and have, you know, had to deal with a lot of shows getting cancelled, et cetera, because they're speaking up in Palestine. And this is one of their songs. It's called Hunger Games, which I thought was particularly kind of relevant. Obviously, there's a starvation going on in Gaza. This is more about, you know, poverty in the UK and how, you know, people even in rich countries are struggling to get food. So it's obviously a bit of a different situation. But I thought it's quite relevant for the time and good to support legends like Bob Dylan. And it's a really good song as well. So hope listeners enjoy.
Yes.
Election comes and they all pour out. I never see them round here where the pause about. Bunch of pussies shouting back and forth. See how the claws come out, meow, ooh. And I'm here, three layers sat in the coldest seat. World outside is burning down, my flat still won't hold heat. When was it great? Someone lied again. Seems like price of life's on the rise again. Wait, someone lend me a five there. Alright, alright, what will you win yourself tonight? Spin the wheel for the chance of a hot meal. Alright, I can fill my cup, cause their cup runneth over, and my cup ain't got enough. Listen, mate, it's rough, and I'm made of tougher stuff. So if I can't eat, I'm back on street. Poppy seed, no buttercup. I trained myself with these chemical concoctions. The kids aren't alright, we need a way to feed our offspring. My brethren's doing a stretch, cause he weren't taking what they're offering, but he was offering what they're taking. Judge found out, and he looked alright. Alright, what will you win yourself tonight? Spin the wheel for the chance.
Worst days of our lives will provide great entertainment. We'll all tune in, watch ourselves chase it. Go on, piggy, go on, little piggy, piggy. For the love of payment. The worst days of our lives will provide great entertainment. But I won't tune in and watch us chase it. We're made for more, I say we take it. Alright, alright, what will you win yourself tonight? Chance of a hot meal. Alright, alright. Spin the wheel for a
are more than your take-home pay, making barely enough to make it through the day. I know, I know, I know. You are more than your ability to earn. You are more than your future successes. You are here. You are now. Surely, your existence is testament to the successful lineage from which you arrive. Here, now. You are stronger than you think you are. You are love. You are not alone. You are going through hell, but keep going. Be proud. Be open. Be loud. Be hopeful. Be healthy. Be happy. Be kind to yourself. Be decisive. Here. Now. Do not live every day as if it is your last. Live every day as if it is your first. Full of wonder and excitement as you wander along, excited, marveling at the possibilities of all that stands before you. Here. Now.
Yap, 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 yap. You are listening to Green Left Radio. It is 3CR, 7 minutes past eight on your Friday morning. And you're just listening to Hunger Games by Bob Villain, who famously on stage at Glasto was chanting, "Death, death to the IDF." And he's garnered a lot of love for that, and good on him.
All right. So before our last interview for the program, I want to go into the Green Left activist calendar. And you can look at some of the listings for these events on greenleft.org.au/events, which is regularly updated with all the kind of activist events that we can kind of find and important kind of protests. So some of the important events that are kind of coming up is... there is actually an art exhibition sort of happening from Friday the 1st of August to the Sunday the 17th of August. And that's going to be, and that's basically having, that's going to be, that's basically at the Black Spark Cultural Centre in Northcote. And so basically includes a lot of rare original resistance posters from Palestine. Then tonight at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a Friday night snap rally for Gaza called by Students for Palestine. We're recommending that people bring their pots and pans, you know, to kind of mark the opposition to the mass starvation in Gaza. On Saturday, August the 2nd, there's going to be a rally, Hands Off Public Housing, at 11 a.m. at the State Library. Now, this is going to be an important rally about opposing the destruction of public housing by the Victorian State Government. So that'll be happening at 11 a.m. in the city, State Library in the city. Then there'll be a protest against the outside the ALP State Conference, and that'll be at the Moonee Valley Racecourse in Moonee Ponds at 3:30 p.m.
And to get to that, you can catch the number 59 tram to Moonee Ponds Junction, or you can catch a train on the Craigieburn line to Moonee Ponds.
All right. Now, the next kind of protest to highlight is the Sunday protest is going to be a bit special this Sunday. In solidarity with the Harbour Bridge protest, we're basically going to be calling on people on the on the Sunday protest to march through the city to King Street Bridge. So that will be happening at 12 p.m. at the State Library as part of the weekly Free Palestine rally. And then on Wednesday, August the 6th, there's going to be a vigil, 80 years since Hiroshima Day, at from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the St. Paul's Cathedral, corner of Swanson and Flinders Street in the city. Sorry. And then on Thursday, August the 7th, there's going to be a rally, National Strike for Palestine, at 2 p.m. at the State Library. Then on Saturday, August the 9th, there's going to be a rally, Free Palestine Dangdong, Sanction Israel Now, at 12 p.m. at the Dangdong Market.
And as part of that rally, we're going to be hearing from a young woman that's recently actually come here from Gaza. So bring your pots and pans to that as well to mark the mass starvation Israel's imposing on people in Gaza. And that's for anyone who lives in the southeast, Dangdong Market. August 9th, 12 p.m.
And then I'll just go through the last few events. There'll be the Green Left Comedy Debate, Billionaires Should Run the Government, at 6:30 p.m. at the Brunswick Town Hall. And then there'll be, of course, be another weekly Palestine protest on Sunday, August the 10th. And I just also want to highlight there'll be a rally defending the right to protest at 5:30 p.m. at the Parliament of Victoria on Tuesday, August the 12th. But yeah, I'll finish up there. You can look up the listings of the event on the Green Left website. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in NAMM.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest President Donald Dump leading the positive team. Take it away, Don.
It's going to be a big debate, a great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
You're back listening, or we're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And we are really excited to be joined by left-wing legendary musician Les Thomas. Welcome, Les, are you there?
Good morning, Chloe. Thank you so much for having me.
And you're also here with, it's our pleasure, you're here with Zane and also Jacob.
Hey, Zane and Jacob.
we're just trying to adjust the mics in the studio.
Not everybody's on the mic.
Tweaking the panel. We've got a few hot carts here. Yes. Trying to broad the pots.
Now, Les, we are really excited to talk about your upcoming launch, the Firing Line single launch and Palestine Solidarity event with Kavisha Mazzella on August 31st. Can you please tell us more about this?
Yeah, so basically we know the horrors that are being perpetrated by Israel in Gaza, the death and starvation. Things reached a point where I basically had to address this through what I do in terms of songwriting, and I've kind of wrestled with how to do that in the best way I can that can be impactful, because I think it's easy to write like 300 songs about everything that's utterly harrowing, but I'm trying to actually, you know, be effective with my work, and I've written a song called The Firing Line, which is actually a universal anthem against genocide, the kind we're seeing in Gaza. And it can apply, you know, to anywhere, really, where similar atrocities happen. I guess if I'm going to put out a single, it was also worth doing a launch. Importantly for me, I'm connected to my community, to people on the ground who are fighting for change and so on. So I've been involved in previous gigs with the wonderful Kavisha Mazzella, especially in support of asylum seeker justice over the years. So, yeah, I'm really thrilled that she can join me to help launch this song on the 31st of August. The song is going to come out on the 18th of August, and hopefully it'll get through to people. I'm hoping actually it'll get through to people outside of our immediate circles who are already active and doing, you know, nonstop work. So yeah, I think I've always felt it important for artists to reflect the times they're living in, do what we can. And I'm hoping that the 31st of August will be, you know, a crowded room of the Curtain Hotel, which is an important place in terms of trade union history in Australia, and we'll raise as much money as we can to directly support the people who need it in Gaza for food relief.
Les, we spoke a while back with Tracksuit from The Herd about their song Soul of My Soul, and Tracksuit told us a bit about the approach there, because you're trying to write about something with such like the gravity of genocide. There's a risk that you can wallow in grief and horror or wallow in rage, but then there's also a risk to kind of go the other way into sort of toxic positivity or just talking about hope and glossing over the horror. I'm interested to hear a bit more about how you tried to wrap your head around that and come up with write a song that it's such a heavy topic, and it's so, as you say, it's there's so many tangents you could go on as well.
Yeah, so I totally hear what you're saying, especially regarding glossing over and things like that. I think that there's no denying the realities. I mean, most of us wake up to see that horror via our phones, seeing, you know, children blown apart and the most graphic of scenes. So it's a matter of, we live in a fairly, but most of us, I would say, in Australia have been sheltered from the immediate effects of war and devastation. We have a second-hand experience by way of the media. A lot of that media, or as in all of the mainstream media, give us a very filtered concept of what's going on that is quite distorted, I'll argue. So, yeah, I suppose the challenge is, how do you communicate what's going on an emotional as well as a moral and political level? And I think people, when they hear something that rings true to them, will respond to that. I think people know when they're being lied to or when they're only given half of the story. So with a lot of songs that... I think a lot of the best political songs will humanise their subject by making it about, you know, a person telling their story and whatnot. This song is the kind that I think presents the situation and invites questions as well, because, you know, we need to ask, who are you going to answer to, you know, when the light of justice turns to you? What would you tell your own child? You know, I think those questions for those of us who live in much more sheltered or privileged settings are very important when we're facing the moral test of our time. I think there needs to be space in songs or written work for people to bring their experience and exercise their own minds around these questions, because there are a lot of people, as we know, whose minds are already totally made up. There are a lot of people who feel uncomfortable and uncertain about how to approach these things. But I think that, yeah, if people have an opportunity to see a reality or ask a question of themselves, you know, it's important for people, especially as adults in a very complicated world where there's a lot of, you know, totally inexplicable horror going on, but they need to be able to arrive at a point of, you know, confidence in where they stand politically and morally, and therefore taking action about it. And this song is actually a call to action. You know, it's not just saying, this is a terrible thing, you know, what a shame. It is a matter of, we all have power and we should exercise that power.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think we should also just remind listeners and mention the successful relocation of the launch venue to the Curtain after the last venue cancelled on you, Les. So I just want listeners to not go to the wrong place. And that's, you know, this is happening to quite a few artists out there that are standing up for human rights issues. And yeah, particularly with what's happening in Palestine right now, that it was pretty disappointing that the Wesley Anne cancelled the launch and fundraiser. But yeah, as listeners should know, that Les Thomas and Kavisha Masella are going to be playing at the Curtain, which is great. So please head there on the 31st of August.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chloe. Yeah, I was shocked when I received the email from the Wesley Anne Thursday of last week, because it's the venue where I've run Asylum Seeker Resource Centre fundraisers. I did my album launch there in 2023. I've been to gigs there with lots of Palestinian flags and fears and so forth. And I think sometimes it's easy to take for granted that we live in this progressive bubble of the Melbourne's inner north. And, yeah, like our event is very clearly humanitarian in nature. I believe it should be above, you know, mundane politics. But basically, I think it's a good thing that the venue has apologised and they're talking about changing their policy to be more inclusive and welcoming to freedom of expression, because they actually really do need to be. And, you know, it's a little bit like going in on strike for me. There was a response to the Wesley Anne cancelling our launch and fundraiser that was overwhelming. You know, people were quite rightly outraged by that choice. And it did come down hard on them in the form of boycotts, in the form of bands pulling out, including Fenn Wilson's band last Saturday night. You know, people cancelling their gigs left, right and centre. So it wasn't a coordinated campaign by any means, but people were acting on their consciences. And I think the venue were forced to really think hard about their approach and actually change policy. So, you know, as with a strike, if management backs down, if you actually earn an improvement, like, that's a win, right? So, in the meantime, it's great that the Curtain came through. I think that, you know, as a institution, they understand the dimensions of this and they are welcoming and supportive. And I really feel it's important that if we're doing these kinds of events, that it's in a place that it's fully behind it, right? So, yeah, we were never, ever going to give up. And after the cancellation, I was contacted by a good number of venues or alternative locations. So people really rallied around us and showed their solidarity in practical terms.
And listeners just tuning in, we are speaking with Les Thomas, a singer-songwriter and activist based here in Nam. And Les, we are coming to the end of our show, but I'm just reading off your Instagram here. Please join Les Thomas and Kavisha Mazzella for the launch of The Firing Line, a powerful anti-genocide anthem from Les Thomas, and an afternoon of soul-stirring music and solidarity. It's on Sunday, August the 31st, 3 p.m. at the Curtain, 29 Lygon Street in Carlton. And before we wrap up, was there anything else you wanted to let our listeners know, Les?
I'll just add, in addition to that, thanks, Chloe, that the fundraiser is conveniently after the rally and pretty close to where it usually winds up. So, yeah, if everybody wants to make their way over afterwards, that would be amazing. But, yeah, I just want to give a shout-out to everybody who's been organising around this issue in particular. speaking or being in attendance at the rally is always humbling and moving and brings home the stark realities. Obviously, you know, put your trust in what the media that do support humanity and oppose the war machine and so on. Go Green Left, go every other source of media, including 3CR generally as a station. What we're doing is powerful, and we are in this together. So much solidarity and love to you all.
Word. Les is playing tomorrow at the protest out the front of ALP conference too, which thanks heaps for coming along to that, Les. That's staunch.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate your work and Songs of Resistance and Solidarity. Les Thomas is also joining us on the Green Left live stream Powering Rebellion on August 16th. And we are going to end our show, take you out on one of his songs, Freedom Fighters. Did you want to introduce the song, Les? We won't get time to play all of it, but we'll just get time to play some of it.
Okay. This song would not exist if it wasn't for the work of the Tunaminawait and Molboy Henna Memorial Committee, driven by Joseph Toscano and others out of 3CR. And it is a story of resistance and relevance from the past to the present day. Always will be.
Oops, sorry, word. Cut you off, Les.
Thanks, Eve, Les.
Thanks, Les.
First men hanged here in Melbourne town. Tunaminawait and Molboy Henna wouldn't bow before the crown. January 1842, 5,000 stood on Bowen Street with a twisted sense of justice amid the cheers, dust and heat. Far from their ancestral homes, down in Van Diemen's land, they knew their lives would be in vain if they didn't take a stand. And Tunaminawait's first memory was the slaughter of his kin, when the war of dispossession landed at Cape Grim. His clan, if he ever had the chance, and he saw all the bloody suffering of the settlers advance. All the redcoats and the convicts tried to wipe them out with lead, sent their black line across the island, saying no one would be spared. Tunaminawait and Molboy Henna, your names will be remembered. Warriors went with Robinson on the friendly mission trail, spreading word among the people, to survive we must set sail. And so many struggled to remember what was friendly anymore. 15 went with Robinson to the Port Phillip Colony.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.